on VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Katie Weaver. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak slowly, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
In the Northern Hemisphere, it finally feels like spring. And today on the program, Ana Mateo is here with a perfectly timed words and their stories. This week, we discuss the difference between housekeeping and cleaning house. Then, Kelly Jean Kelly is here with the next part of our series on America's presidents. But first, Faith Perlow and I look at recreation centers at colleges and universities in the U.S. When Gianmarco Douglas was thinking about which medical school to attend earlier this year, he had a number of things in mind. He wanted to go to a school that offered a good education, friendly students, and financial aid. He was considering schools such as the University of Pittsburgh in Pennsylvania, Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia, and Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, Ohio. All of those schools fit his requirements. But he also hoped to find a university that offered good recreational activities. He likes playing friendly games of basketball, known as pickup games, with other students in his free time. Douglas started doing that when he was an undergraduate student at Emory University. He discovered that he could make friends with students from his classes through basketball.
One thing about basketball is that I noticed in comparison to other sports, it allows like a good bit of socialization. The court isn't very big. It's a good balance between playing a very active sport, but also having enough of a break to socialize.
The basketball games resulted in invitations to parties and other events. Between games, students even traded information about professors and classes. Douglas has visited friends and family in Italy. Based on seeing what university life is like there, he thinks international students who are thinking about studying in the U.S. would be surprised by the recreation opportunities. In Cleveland, Ohio, at Cleveland State University, there is a large recreation center. The center takes up 4 floors of a building across the street from the school's College of Engineering. It includes swimming pools, basketball courts, weight training equipment, courts for racket sports, and rooms for classes in activities like yoga and boxing. There is even an area for esports competitions.
Michelle Rieger is the Senior Associate Director of Programming and Operations for the Recreation Center. She said, it makes sense that Douglas, the future medical student, would also want to know about recreational opportunities. She said, research by the National Intramural Recreational Sports Association, or NIRSA, shows that 68% of students say the campus recreation center is part of the reason why they chose their school. Rieger said Cleveland State has long been known as a commuter school. That means many students come to the university buildings to take classes and then go home. But she said, the recreation center is a big wow factor for them. Some students even decide to live in university housing so they can use the recreation center more often. NIRSA's research suggests that not only does a good recreation center or gym help students decide to attend a school, but it also keeps them in school. In a city like Cleveland, where the weather can be cold and snowy for much of the school year, it is good to have an indoor place for students to spend time. Rieger said that is important for international students who come from warm parts of the world.
A lot of times people who aren't used to it, the weather, they don't want to leave their room. So we do try to do things indoors for them as well as outdoors to get them moving, and try to do a number of different programs just to entice them and really get them to feel like they belong here and that there's a community here, so that they want to keep coming, not just for the wellness, the physical wellness aspect, but for that social wellness and the mental well-being as well.
Cleveland State offers students many off-campus recreational opportunities. Students can go on camping and hiking trips. They can also learn how to use watercraft, such as canoes, kayaks, and paddleboards. Cleveland is home to an important river and is on Lake Erie, one of America's Great Lakes. However, not every student goes on those kinds of trips. NERSA notes that the majority of students center their time on weight training, fitness equipment such as treadmills, and open play, like the pickup basketball games Douglas enjoys. The school offers recreational activities to keep students involved in campus activities. One recent morning, a message board had announcements for a racket sport called pickleball, a fitness club meeting, and a club event for a video game called Rocket League. Rieger said she wants to make sure the recreation center is a friendly place for everyone, where they can come in and just experience the joy of recreating.
Feeling at ease was important for Oman Pokrel, who was lifting weights there recently. Pokrel is from Nepal and lived in Cleveland for almost 10 years before attending Cleveland State. He is in his first year of criminal justice and business studies. He comes to the gym nearly every day to lift weights and run. "I do think people are friendly and enjoy themselves here," he said. Pokrel said he sees how the recreation center could influence some students. Pokrel can get some exercise before or after class, and it is cost-free. Before starting at Cleveland State, he spent extra money to go to a martial arts gym in his community. "I love going to the gym and lifting weights. I do think having a gym here for me does clear my mind. I feel lighter and faster than I was last year," he said. Douglas is the student who attended Emory. He starts medical school later this year at Case Western Reserve University. He said it was surprising how much he valued his time playing basketball with friends during college. He said, "It is not necessary to be a great athlete to join a pickup game at a college recreation center." He offered some advice for international students who may walk past a campus bulletin board and wonder about the activities advertised.
"They should really inquire into those things instead of maybe just seeing an advertisement, like ignoring it. I feel like they would end up perhaps enjoying several of these activities more than expected and make very good friendships."
I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Faith Perlow.
And now, words and their stories. from VOA Learning English. Spring is a time of the year when many people take time to clean. They straighten up messy areas of their homes. They tidy up. Spring cleaning is a popular activity for many people. It is a chance to get rid of unnecessary items and get their homes clean and organized. Spring cleaning usually involves big projects, such as taking down and washing curtains, shaking out rugs and cleaning carpets, perhaps clearing out and cleaning up cabinets and closets. Spring cleaning is a thorough cleaning inside and out. So on today's program, we are going to clean house too. Daily cleaning tasks, like doing the laundry or dishes, are not considered spring cleaning. That is often called housekeeping or cleaning house. We use both of these terms in idiomatic ways. First, let's talk about cleaning house. When an organization, business, or other group cleans house, it gets rid of people or policies that make trouble or that do not work. Let's hear an example.
My friend has a company that is suffering from troublemaking and non-productive employees. If the owner wants the company to succeed, she may need to clean house and fire anyone not contributing.
Cleaning house can also mean to wipe out corruption or inefficiency. When we use it this way, we are often talking about a political party or a governmental office. Here's an example for that situation.
The city official in charge of education reform made cleaning house on corruption and waste the first item on his to-do list.
Sometimes we put words between clean and house to make the expression more specific, as in this example.
To help their company succeed, the business partners needed to clean their financial house, and that meant hiring a new financial manager, one that wouldn't steal from them.
If you research the expression online, you may find another meaning for cleaning house: to punish or to give a beating. For example, the bully threatened to clean house on anyone who disagreed with him. But this usage is not as common as getting rid of ineffectual, troublesome, or wasteful elements in a group. Now let's talk about housekeeping. Housekeeping defines the act of managing a household. Cleaning, organizing, paying the bills, and keeping food stocked can all be called housekeeping. Sometimes we call this putting our house in order. When we put our house in order, we make sure it is running smoothly. It can also mean to organize your finances and other responsibilities, especially when preparing for a life-changing event. Used as a noun, housekeeping is also the department at a hotel in charge of keeping your room clean and stocked with necessary items, like towels and soap. Housekeeping also describes any repeated tasks that keep a business or organization running smoothly. So housekeeping issues for a business could be managing and scheduling resources. It could also be tasks like keeping your computer up and running, or updating staff on events or policy changes. So think of it this way: housekeeping issues are the day-to-day ongoing tasks and responsibilities that keep a business, home, or organization running smoothly. And cleaning house is to get rid of anything that is not working or is creating a mess, either literally or figuratively. As for usage, both of these expressions can be used in formal and informal situations. That's all the time we have for this Words and Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Ana Mateo.
I'm Dan Friedel, and you're listening to the Learning English broadcast. We are joined now by Ana Mateo. You just heard Ana's Words and Their Stories feature. Welcome to the show, Ana.
Thanks for having me, Dan.
Ana, you talked about a number of house and home-related terms and sayings. What brought that to mind?
You're right, I did. Well, it's that time of the year, spring. And I love a good spring cleaning. I especially love spring cleaning my clothes. I give away items I don't want so others can wear them. I also spring clean books, old toys, and household items. If I have time, I clean house on all the papers I accumulate. Old bills, statements, notes, you know, the things that pile up. Anything unimportant gets thrown away.
Ana, that sounds like a good project, but also a lot of work. I'm doing a spring project right now, too. A builder is helping me replace some of the wood on my home. Let's hope all these projects make us feel good about the next part of the year. But Ana, let's talk about the difference between housekeeping and cleaning house. I feel like English learners could mix up those ideas.
Absolutely. When we say housekeeping, we mean the daily, ongoing tasks that keep a home or business or organization running. In a home, that could be putting clothes away after cleaning them or washing dishes after a meal. But cleaning house is a different story. Cleaning house is a one-time or infrequent event. You want to get rid of something problematic. So you hope it's infrequent. If you often clean house at work or in your personal life, you may have a bigger problem on your hands.
Ah, that's right. I'm sure there are some sports fans who wish their favorite team would clean house a little more often and bring in some new players. Thanks for talking with us today, Ana.
You're welcome, Dan. It is always fun to chat with you.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about Zachary Taylor, the 12th president. He took office in 1849. Taylor had some things in common with earlier presidents. Like six others before him, he was born in Virginia. Like George Washington and Andrew Jackson, Taylor was a war hero. And, like William Henry Harrison, he died in office. But Taylor brought at least one special trait to the presidency. Although he was officially elected as a member of the Whig Party, Taylor considered himself an independent. When Zachary Taylor was a baby, his family left Virginia. They moved west to a tobacco plantation in Kentucky. There, the Taylors were financially successful. By the time Zachary was a young man, His family owned a number of enslaved people and over 4,000 hectares of land. Taylor took possession of some of his family's land. He also had cotton plantations in the southern states of Mississippi and Louisiana. He, too, depended on enslaved people to do most of the work. But Taylor was unlike many wealthy farmers in the South. He had always wanted to be a soldier. When Taylor was 24 years old, he became an officer in the U.S. Army. Shortly after, he married Margaret Smith. In time, they had 5 daughters and 1 son. But Taylor directed most of his attention to his military career. For about 20 years, he tried to keep peace between Native American tribes and white Americans. Sometimes the job meant leading attacks against Native Americans. At times, it meant defending their lands from white settlers. In either case, his public standing as a good soldier grew. His troops called him Old Rough and Ready because he was willing to fight and suffer alongside them. Then, in the Mexican-American War of the 1840s, Taylor became really famous. He led U.S. troops to victory in several major battles, including ones at Monterey and Buena Vista. In a well-known story, the powerful Mexican general Santa Anna surrounded Taylor and his small number of troops. Santa Anna sent a message demanding that they surrender. Taylor reportedly said, "Tell him to go to hell." The two sides clashed the next morning. Santa Anna had about 3 times the men that Taylor had. Yet, by late that day, Taylor's soldiers had defeated Santa Anna's. Taylor's success as a general helped the United States win the war against Mexico. In the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, Mexico agreed to give up claims to, or sell to the U.S., more than 1.3 million kilometers of its lands, including what are now the states of Texas and California. But the new lands almost immediately caused problems. At the time of the next U.S. presidential election, public opinion in the country was severely divided. The issue was whether to permit slavery in the new lands won at the end of the war with Mexico. In general, Northerners opposed expanding slavery. In general, Southerners supported it. To appeal to both these groups, the major parties at the time looked to Taylor to be their candidate for president. The Democrats and the Whigs reasoned that Taylor was already well-known and well-liked. Historian Michael Holt said, in 1848, Taylor was the most popular man in America. But Taylor was not really political. He called himself an independent. He shared some beliefs with both major parties at the time. But mostly, he wanted to keep the nation together. In the end, he agreed to be the candidate of the Whig Party. During the campaign, he did not take a stand on any of the major issues. His fame as a military general carried him into the White House. Thank you. The truth was that Taylor did have an opinion on slavery. He did not want to expand it, especially in areas that did not support cotton or sugar farms. So, once in office, he proposed a change to the rules about how new territories would become states. The change would let white American male settlers in California and New Mexico decide whether they wanted slavery. Then those areas could enter the Union immediately as states. Taylor aimed to quiet the debate about slavery, but his idea angered almost everybody. Some U.S. lawmakers believed the president had cut them out of the decision. Northerners said Taylor's proposal did not go far enough. It did not solve some of the other issues related to slavery. And Southerners realized that settlers in California and New Mexico would almost surely reject slavery and give free states a majority in Congress. In one dramatic incident, some South Carolina officials called a meeting to discuss withdrawing from the Union. In answer, Taylor threatened to hang them. But before Taylor or his idea could get too far, the president became sick. The story is that he attended outdoor celebrations to mark the nation's birthday, July 4th. Then he went for a walk. The weather was very hot. To cool off, Taylor ate uncooked fruit and drank iced milk. That night, he told others about pain in his stomach. 5 days later, he was dead. His doctor wrote that Taylor died of cholera morbus, a general term for severe digestive problems. A few people thought he might have been poisoned. The suspicion remained until 1991, when medical officials examined Taylor's remains. They confirmed that he died of natural causes. A more recent study offers more details. Jane McHugh and Philip A. Makoviak say that Taylor was a victim of the same problem that killed Presidents William Henry Harrison and James Polk. Dirty water in the White House. Taylor's death, while unfortunate, did not cause a political crisis. John Tyler had already established the rule that if a president dies in office, the vice president becomes president. But Taylor's death did likely change the direction of history. His replacement, Millard Fillmore, did not try to hold the Union together by force. Instead, he joined with politicians who wanted to compromise on the issue. The compromise legislation delayed but did not really settle the debate. In time, the division between North and South led to the American Civil War. And members of Taylor's own family became linked to the states that withdrew from the Union. One of his daughters had married Jefferson Davis, who became the president of the Confederacy. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's the Learning English broadcast for today. Thank you, Kelly, for that report. And thanks to our VOA colleagues for their work on today's program.
Most importantly, thank you for listening. For more, visit our website at learningenglish.voanews.com. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Dan Friedel.